This is Good Vibrations. We're downtown. It's another on-location episode of Sexploration with Monica. We're at Barbara Kareles' book signing. She has a new book, and suddenly I can't remember the name of it.
Ecstasy is necessary.
See how handy it is to have a sex-positive person sitting next to you at all times. This is Marcia Baczynski, and she is a relationship expert in her own right and does a lot of work with people in wanting to open up their relationship, people who are, you know, interested in learning more about polyamory or the various forms of having an open relationship. And I hear that you're doing a new class.
I am, and I'm very excited because it's a six-month program for couples who are interested in opening up. I know that's a big commitment, just like 6 months, what? So I made a whole bunch of really cool videos for people who are like wanting to learn more about this stuff that you can go get online and watch and see what I'm all about and all that kind of stuff without being like, okay, I have to sign up for a six-month thing.
Well, and I think it takes a while, though, to process stuff and like, oh, this just happened and I really need to talk about this. And, you know, because I think that opening up your relationship, baby steps are key.
Absolutely. I mean, that's one of the things that I see people make as a mistake all the time is like, oh, mm-hmm. let's just open up our relationship. Like, it's a yes or no question.
Right.
And in reality, there's a million different things to talk. Well, maybe not a million. There's probably about 25 different things you need to talk about what do you mean by that? And when you say open, like, is it because there's somebody that in particular? Is it because a philosophical thing? Are we talking about sex with other people, flirting? There's lots of different ways to be open, and like, how do you even know what that is? It's not an overnight
right.
decision.
You know, what's safe to me might not be safe to everyone, so you really have to unpack everything.
Yeah, and I think also I see people make the mistake of not really knowing where they're going. Mm. So it's you know, there's what's safe to you, there's what's safe to me, but then it's like, well, you might want a committed triad relationship and I might want to sleep with people at parties. Those are not the same thing.
Totally. Yeah. Really.
Yeah.
And getting someone else involved in your relationship, that's kind of a big deal for some people. And then for other people, it's like, well, of course, this is, you know, I want a non-hierarchical bisexual relationship. And you're like, oh.
What does all that jargon mean?
Well, there's that too. Let's talk about jealousy, because I think that's definitely a green-eyed monster that jumps out at people.
Yeah, with jealousy in particular, I think it's a tricky thing because, you know, it's sort of this socially acceptable gloss, I think, we put on a lot of other feelings, like sadness or anger or feeling left out or feeling afraid that you're going to be,
right,
you know, not enough or something mm-hmm. like that.
Some people mean jealousy and love are the same thing. Like,
yeah.
I wouldn't be, if I didn't love you, I wouldn't be jealous.
Right, right. And so it's kind of all collapsed together. Mm. So I do think there's a lot of value in, regardless if you're open or not, just actually looking at, well, when I feel jealous, what exactly am I feeling? What's really underneath that for me? And why am I putting the label jealousy on it? You know, is there another word that might be a better fit mm-hmm. for what I'm actually feeling? Because then you can actually start to get into, oh, well, if I'm feeling that, then I might need this. Mm-hmm. You know, if I'm feeling afraid that you're going to leave me, what I might need is reassurance. But if I'm just calling that jealousy, then mm-hmm. I never get a chance to find out what I'm needing.
Yeah, let's talk about what are some of those things that they could be. I mean, because I would always be afraid that my partner would leave me or that, you know, he would think that someone was more attractive than I was. But I think maybe guys may or may not, stereotypically or not, experience something different, you know, because like, oh, I just don't want you being with another man, you know, mm-hmm. but they are okay with them being with other people sometimes.
Yeah, I think that there's a bunch of stuff around like possession and ownership, and you know, that's not necessarily a bad thing. That can be really hot in some
yeah,
cases.
Totally. You're mine. Ooh, really?
Yeah.
Tell me more about that.
It depends on, you know, it totally depends on your relationship and
totally.
What you want. And that's something that you can negotiate. But if mm-hmm. you're somebody who doesn't want to be owned and you're dating somebody who or married to somebody who has an ownership model, that might might be indicative of some future issues.
Yeah, and can we own each other without being sexually exclusive? Is that possible? Like, own each other without controlling?
Well, and I think one thing that I've seen a lot of couples do is actually have things that are theirs that is,
right.
like, this is our thing. So maybe their open looks like flirting with other people, making out with other people, but reserving certain sex acts for just the two of them.
You can only have butt sex with me.
Right. Right. Exactly. Exactly.
That's our thing, baby.
That's our thing. You can only go see French films with me.
Yeah, totally. I mean, whatever it is, whatever right? It is. Only this restaurant. Or yeah. I mean, it could be, yeah, because couples do have their thing. And that's like some things are sacred.
And what is it, you know, what is it? What is the token that is the thing that I can count on as being mm-hmm. ours? I think is a really important thing for people. And when you can kind of look at it and actually like decide that together, like this is what I want to be ours. And okay, great. Let's have that be our thing. And then this other stuff can be, you know, maybe not everybody's, but maybe this is where we play. And it doesn't, I think when people start having the conversation of opening up, it feels like anything goes.
Woo! And emotional landmine time.
Hello. But the really successful ones, the really successful relationships have tons of boundaries. And there's tons of things that are off limits. And there's tons of stuff that's like, well, yeah, let's do this and not that. Mm-hmm. It's like any other relationship. It's, you know, if you want a good relationship, you can't just plow over the other person's needs
right.
and desires.
Yeah. You still have to stay connected with them.
Yeah. And you have to stay kind of synced up and make mm-hmm. sure you're getting, you know, putting nurturing time into your relationship.
Right.
And all the things you have to do when you want a happy monogamous relationship.
Right.
Plus some.
Right. So as you're on this journey unpacking other people's relationships, what sorts of things have you been learning about kind of the overarching relationship thing that human beings are doing right now?
You know, that's a really good question. I've been really surprised by how often it's the women motivating this. Like, I would have expected that it would have been mostly men initiating. And it's about 50-50 in the hetero relationships I'm working with. So that's been really interesting. And the other thing that's really interesting is how, and this could just be that we're in the Bay Area, but how much bisexuality and hetero flexibility I'm seeing among the men these days.
I know, isn't that awesome? It's so exciting.
It's so good. Yeah. I love it.
Come out of the closet, boys.
Yes. but there's a lot of that. And again, because one of the things I always tell people is, you know, being open doesn't mean anything goes or going all the way. You know, mm-hmm. this isn't middle school anymore, people.
Right. You can do whatever you want to do.
Right. And you can have boundaries wherever you want them to right. be. And so I'm finding that, you know, men are more open to being sensual with each other without necessarily being sexual. For its own sake, not even because the woman wants it. And I'm finding that women are like, you know, I don't want to have a relationship where we go and, you know, sleep with tons of people or even have a full-blown relationship with somebody else. But I want to be able to go on dates and flirt and make out and hold hands and mm-hmm. and make friends with people who are sex positive and just have a sex positive circle of friends.
Right.
And there's a lot more flexibility you know, and I'm hearing terms like heteroflexible and fluid relationships. And there's just a lot of, it seems like there's a lot of space these days that I think even 5-10 years ago there was. I've been poly for a long time.
Cool.
I wasn't seeing that in the scene 5 or 10 years
right.
ago, you know.
Right. How can people find you?
You can find me at successfulnonmonogamy.com if you want to see my videos or at askingforwhatyouwant.com.
Excellent. Marcia Buczynski, it's always such a pleasure.
I love chatting with you, Monica. This
Yay.
Is great.
This is sex. Everyone gets what they want. This is sexploration.
Explore. Play.
This is sexploration with Monica.
Sex is proof that God loves us and wants us to have fun.
Sexploration with Monica at sexplorationwithmonica.com.
Now I'm sitting next to professional dominatrix and sex educator Eve Minax. Welcome back to Sexploration with Monica, Eve.
Hi, Monica. Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. So you've been up to some exciting things. You just finished a fun class.
Yeah, I had a great class at the San Francisco Citadel last week. It's called The Fuck is Swifter Than the Cry, Raping with Intent and Care, which is a really intense topic, as you can imagine.
Yes, yes, the careful raping is important. Careful, consensual raping, yes.
Exactly. So a lot of people have violation fantasies, or what I call violation fantasies, or rape fantasies, just to be blunt. And they have a hard time either revealing that to their partner, or their partner maybe has a desire to, you know, do that kind of play and has a hard time kind of revealing that. So it starts from sort of the conversation. How do you even begin to converse about that to the actual act? And then, of course, the aftermath, because you know, there can be, it's a sexual minefield, as it were.
Haha. Yeah, you might want to have some aftercare.
Right.
A little cuddling, a little talking. How did that go? How did you feel? How did I feel? How did I feel? I don't know. But what I did find out when I was taking a human sexuality class at the college level was that rape is the number one fantasy of women. As long as it's a fantasy, as long as they get to choose the rapist and when it happens.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for that statistic. I will use that if you don't mind in my future.
Please.
Okay, great. Thanks. I didn't know that, but I'm not surprised. And as a professional who has had many people, this is how this class actually came about, is so many people over the years coming to me, men, women, other gendered alike, all saying, you know, I need this kind of thing. And actually, I've become sort of a, if you pardon the expression, gangbang expert.
Awesome.
So not just a...
Put that on your business card.
Right. Yeah. Not just an individual violation, but multiples.
Right.
Yeah. But and those are actually really challenging to organize as well. But the main thing is generally, you know, I mean, as long as you do your basic sort of corporal precautions and all that, it's not really about the physical safety. I mean, there are actual skills and techniques and things that you need to employ, but it's really the psychological stuff that gets really heady.
Well, I imagine that, like, maybe they get so in the moment that they can't, they're just not sure if they really did consent to this, exactly this. And then they aren't sure if they could say, you know what I mean? Like, the whole no and the yes, it becomes really tricky.
I talk about that in the class with particularly in terms of the top or the person, the violator, if you will, playing, no matter how aggressive they are, no matter how intense the scene is, they have to really, really, really keep in check with the violatee, the bottom or what have you, the receptor, to make sure that they've got, you know, are you with me? And then there's certain techniques that you can do, you know, like, hey, you with me? Or safe word, you know, or whatever the case may be, just doing a check-in while still continuing this sort of aggressive play. Because if the person goes into a dissociative state, then they can actually go into a state of victimization, mm-hmm. and then you do really become the perpetrator, and nobody will be happy with that.
Right. Well, because it depends on how real it is for you psychologically. I mean, you could be re-experiencing some trauma rather than having this connected, pleasurable experience. And that's not sex, you know?
Right. That's actually re-traumatization.
Right.
And that's another thing that comes up in the class a lot, is a lot of people who are interested in this type of play are reclaiming some kind of sexual violation that they've had occur in the past. Mm-hmm. And if they go into re-traumatization, well, you're not really, no one's doing anyone any favors. What it should be is really fucking healing, pardon my expression, but, you know, amazingly.
In a good way, fucking in a good way.
Amazingly healing and regenerative for all parties. So I truly believe that rough sex can lead to sexual healing.
And you are sort of moving away as a sex educator from the SM world a little bit.
Yeah, I'm not moving away from it. I'm augmenting my palette, as it were. I'm expanding my views. I've always been sort of a tantric based person. Anyhow, I've always believed that, you know, we exchange energy first. And when I taught my classes on corporal and what have you, I've always said that before you even pick up an implement, you should be able to know how to run energy with another person and also use your hands, you know, and mouth and, you know, other whatever. Just use your body in a way that's really meaningful before you even go on to pick up a whip or a crop or what have you. So I guess what I'm trying to do now is just expand that a little bit more. I've been working with a lot of different people on how to ameliorate, how to improve their sexual relations, how to spice up their lives, moving beyond vanilla, but also working with people on sexual dysfunction issues and also, like, you know, this little stat that you have here, helping people work out their fantasies and also just helping them create really hot and beautiful scenes. So I'm not moving away from BDSM. I'm expanding my repertoire to show that it's a lot more expansive than just kink, although kink is, of course, still near and dear to my heart, as you very well know.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, literally and figuratively.
So
I actually have a slave in the cage right now, as we speak.
Really?
He's on a 3-day stay, so he's being babysat right now while we're at the party.
Excellent. Good.
How can people find you?
I can be found at evemanax.com, E-V-E, M as in Mary, I, N as in Nancy, A-X.
And it's Minax, like the spider.
Yes. it is Minax like the spider. You good girl. Most people didn't know that. Yeah, I'm actually named after a Southeast Asian tarantula. If you're interested in the professional sort of domination aspects, there is also mistressminax.com.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much, Eve.
Thank you, Monica. Always a pleasure to see you.
We're at Good Vibrations, and I found Fleur de Lis, San Francisco's sluttiest blogger, Vanessa Pinto. Vanessa, welcome back to Sexploration with Monica.
Hello, Sexploration with Monica.
So you've been on some adventures lately. You're getting around. Not only are you heading to Washington, D.C. shortly, but also you went to the Bill Conference in Long Island on the cruise ship with Nina Hartley.
Long Beach.
Yes, Long Beach.
It was on the Queen Mary, and Bill is sort of the antithesis of TED. The TED Talks happen every year in Long Beach, and so Bill was...
Bill and TED.
Bill was created to... it's the unconference. Presenters can actually go in and sign up at times. It's just, it's not quite as structured as TED, but it has a lot of useful information, and this year they decided to have a sex-positive boiler room, and they asked Reed Mihalko to run that for him.
And it's also kind of open source, like the Wikipedia of conferences. Like, people could do a speech if they have one.
Yes, that's it. People can talk about different things, what they do or what they're passionate about. We had things on technology. We had things on engineering. We had things on competitiveness, on all sorts of different things. And then, obviously, we had all of the sex-positive talks and demos down in the boiler room.
Like the video that I saw with Nina Hartley.
Yes, Nina Hartley came and did a blowjob demonstration class that was amazing. That woman is just one of the funniest people and just delightful human beings I've had the pleasure of meeting.
Yeah, really strong, powerful, feminist, amazing woman, total knockout.
And just, you know, it's funny, if you met her, you wouldn't realize that she's done pornography for so many years. She really just comes off as such a teacher, and she is a teacher. She's a nurse and a teacher, but it's great. I mean, spending time with her, we ended up actually sharing a hotel room, and she was just delightful, just truly quirky and fun.
So tell me about Momentum.
Momentum is a conference that's happening in Washington, D.C. at the end of the month, and it's a very, very big sex-positive conference that happens once a year. It's being sponsored by Your Mask, Sexual Flavors. They were also the same people that supported Bill. But essentially, it brings people from all over the country and some international people to talk about all things sex positive and important. Like, Dr. Jocelyn Elders is our keynote on Sunday, and so that's very exciting to hear her speak and know that she's going to be there. So it's mainly just, it's a lot of education, it's a lot of presentations, and it's going to be a very good time.
Cool. Well, how can people find you?
People can always find me at fleurdelissf.com, or if you just Google slutty blogger, you will find me.
All of your adventures in slutdom.
Yes. Or Vanessa Pinto, which is my real name. If you Google that, you will find everything I do as well.
Excellent. Thanks so much.
Thank you. There you
go. So now, the main dish of our evening, Barbara Kareles, author of her new book. She did write Urban Tantra. And this is Pleasure is Necessary?
Ecstasy is necessary.
Ecstasy is necessary.
Big difference between pleasure and ecstasy.
True. Let's talk more about that. What is the big difference between pleasure and ecstasy?
When we talk about ecstasy, when people talk about ecstasy, you notice that they never say it's nice. It feels good. It's really pleasant.
It's nice. Right.
They don't say that.
Right.
They say, oh, my God, it feels like some unearthly force picked me up by my ankles, turned me upside down, shook me really hard, jumbled all my atoms, shot lightning out of my fingers and toes, and then put me back upright, and I am forever changed.
As in ecstatic experiences, spiritual experiences.
You know, it took writing this whole book, it took till it was in between the covers that I realized that I had a definition of ecstasy after trying to spend a whole book kind of playing around with that. I realized that for me, ecstasy is the perfect combination of just the right blend of sex and spirit.
Right, right. Spirituality that is sexy, that, and also sex that's sacred. All at the same time.
And you know those experiences that just take you so far beyond yourself?
Right.
That whatever you thought your possibilities were, mm-hmm. whatever ceiling, whatever lid was on you, mm-hmm. feels like it gets blown off and there's a whole lot more possibilities out there than you ever thought were available to you.
Mm-hmm. Pleasure that blows your mind in kind of a meditative way.
Yeah, or a revelatory way.
Right.
In a life-changing way.
Right.
And, you know, sex can get us there really, really, really well, and so can a whole lot of other experiences that, when approached in just the right way, become sex. Mm. I asked my Facebook and Twitter people, give me examples of experiences other than sex and orgasm that are ecstatic. Hundreds of answers, some of which went into the book. People can find experiences that are so yummy when they're trance dancing to drums, or painting if they're into art, or playing music, or watching children being born, or watching people die, that in fact are orgasmic in their own way, that are erotic.
So tell me about the fMRI. Please. Pretty please. With sugar on top.
Okay.
And sparkles.
Just for you.
This is a great story.
I got a call from a television producer for the Discovery Channel who said, I hear that you can think off. And I went,
Braingasm.
Well, I can have orgasms without touching my genitals. Is that what you mean? Yeah. Okay. What does that mean for you? Well, we want to do a little documentary on you. We want to put you inside an fMRI machine and take pictures of your brain while you think off. And we want to know if it's a real orgasm.
Right.
And I went, gosh, I wanted to know that for 25 years. Here's the problem. I'm severely claustrophobic.
Oh, right, because the fMRI is a really small little box.
You got it. Tube or,
right.
Yeah.
No, it's totally like,
So the challenge, and it's the story I tell at the beginning of the book, was how unbelievably challenging it was for me to get into that fMRI machine.
Let alone have an orgasm without touching yourself. Hello.
You know what the interesting part is? I could never have had a genital orgasm. Well, first of all, you can't have a vibrator inside an fMRI because it's metal, and you can't have metal around an fMRI machine because they're magnetic.
Right, totally.
So the only possible kind of orgasm I could have had would have been what I call an energy orgasm. And honestly,
no, fingering you? I'm sorry, that's a technicality that we don't have to explore.
I would not have gotten off with a finger.
Oh.
Some women can.
Right.
Not inside that claustrophobe too.
Right, I suppose not. Okay.
But interestingly enough, because in an energy orgasm, I tend to sort of go off on this magic carpet ride, kind of sailing off into the cosmos. God knows I didn't want to stay inside that fMRI machine, so it really probably helped me to be under such strain and duress. I guess maybe that's how SM works, huh?
Yeah, right. It takes you out of your mind.
Yeah, is it?
Because you're into this top space, subspace place.
Yes, I suppose one way of looking at it is like being inside that fMRI machine was really just some very expensive bondage.
And like kind of a fear play thing, sort of.
Oh, definite fear play.
Right?
I'm not usually into that kind of edge play, that particular kind.
Right.
But
so tell me about what happened. So you're just thinking, how do you think your way to orgasm?
That's the misnomer. That's why I don't call it thinking off. Mm-hmm. For me, the imagination is a part of it, but what really does it for me is I change the way I breathe. I breathe a lot more, a lot fuller, a lot deeper, and very, very rhythmically.
Breathing. Yeah. She's doing it right now.
I could actually go right off. So,
and so awesome.
Then the imagination helps because it gives your mind a place of focus. You imagine energy moving through your body. But really, I swear, I think it only keeps the mind on point, as opposed to wandering off to, can I do this? What about the dishes? Am I scared? Whatever. So it's really the breath, the imagination just keeps the mind engaged. And according to metaphysics and to actually quantum physics, energy does follow thought. So if you can engage your imagination in support of whatever it is you're, wherever it is you're wanting to go, mm-hmm. it'll be easier to get there.
Right. Okay, so you're having an ecstatic experience that's taking you out of the fMRI tube. You're breathing, you're experiencing energy, and what happens?
I go into a full-body orgasm, a prolonged orgasmic state. There are little visions appearing in my mind. In that particular case, I was seeing all sorts of little spirit helpers and deceased ancestors who were going, "You can do it, we're helping you."
Oh, that's so awesome.
And my body really just felt like it was warm lightning flying through it and these rolling waves of pleasure. It's interesting. Energy orgasms for me tend to feel like they're happening all over my body. The one place I don't feel much during an energy orgasm is my genitals. It's sort of like it's happening everywhere else, interestingly enough.
Interesting. Yeah, that's very interesting.
And it rolled, this one rolled on and on and on and on. It was the one of the brain researchers, I was holding her
hand.
Did
they time it?
They didn't. Well, maybe they did, but they didn't tell me.
Okay.
It went on for a long time. And I was squeezing her hand to tell her when I was feeling the orgasm. I squeezed her hand so much and so many times that she was showing the people in the booth by holding up fingers, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, as I was telling her the orgasm was getting more intense. And she ran out of fingers about halfway through, so
right.
I was very stoned afterwards. Very stoned.
Yeah. Oh, I imagine all the endorphins and so what did they see on the MRI?
They saw that. Now, no one study is conclusive. They are no one fMRI is conclusive, and they're doing this study with a lot of other different people. However, my scan showed that all the areas of the brain that typically light up during orgasm were, in fact, firing full tilt boogie. So it was, in fact, an orgasm as perceived by the brain.
So let's go back to how ecstasy is necessary. So you're saying that, like, the ecstatic experience of sexual pleasure is necessary. Can you say more?
Mm-hmm. Wilhelm Reich used to say that the sex researcher who was, I think, eventually imprisoned by the United States government, postulated that full body orgasm, not these little hiccups that we sometimes settle
crotch
for.
Crotch sneeze.
Yes, that's right. Are medically, physically necessary. It's like the human body's reset button.
Oh, right, yeah.
But most of us don't ever have that kind of orgasm. I take it a little bigger. I think the ecstatic experience, which happens physically but also emotionally and also in whatever you might call spirit or soul on that higher self level, is just as necessary. Because, again, I think it's the human reset button. And I think humans continue to live because they believe something else and something new is possible. That tomorrow will be a better day. That there is a possibility they haven't seen yet. That there's a curiosity they haven't satisfied. And when we stop feeling that there's something to live for, that there's something more interesting tomorrow, we die.
Or just get spectacularly depressed.
Yes, which obviously can lead some people to die.
Yeah.
So the ecstatic experience, which is attainable no matter what your limitations are, there is a way you can reach an ecstatic experience, be it sex, be it something other than sex, because sex isn't right for everybody.
Right.
But the ecstatic experience will reveal to you magical possibilities in life that you have not glimpsed before. It will crack through whatever the false ceiling is above you and show you something wondrous and new. And that's why I believe ecstasy is necessary.
Well, and I was just going to ask you about that, like the beginning of the pathway. I mean, for people that are having the normal sexual experience, which is not much, and the crotch sneezes, and, you know, I can only have an orgasm if I play with my clitoris, and it's Tuesday, and the wind is just blowing right, and the stars align, and, you know, everything else, and I have to think about it really hard. You know, most people aren't having mind-blowing full-body orgasms. How do you go the... What are the first steps?
Three. The first is breathe. We breathe barely enough to stay alive. Breathe more, breathe longer, breathe fuller, breathe deeper. Breathe before sex, breathe during sex, breathe after sex, breathe. Practice breathing.
You can do it now.
Here's one of my favorites. Breathe a breath so big and so long that you can tickle your genitals from the inside with your inhale. And then let it out with a sigh. Try that at home. See? Okay, that was number one. Number two, practice orgasm. Literally practice. Practice by yourself. Practice with a partner. Practice with multiple partners, with nature, with toys. Practice orgasm. Go on a safari to see how many wild and wonderful different kinds of orgasms you can have, because every one of them opens up new and different neural pathways, which makes yet more new different orgasms possible.
Woo!
And number three, meditate. Consciously combine breath, orgasm, and meditation into meditation, and meditate daily.
Like self-pleasuring plus meditation. Masturbation meets meditation meets breathing.
That's exactly right.
Oh, the cleverness.
So that's my three-point plan.
Excellent. Tell us about Urban Tantra for those of us who haven't read the book.
I love Urban Tantra.
Sounds good.
Urban Tantra is both a book. It's called Sacred Sex, Urban Tantra, Sacred Sex for the 21st Century. And Urban Tantra is my way of bringing sacred sex down into everyone's life. I was frustrated that Tantra seemed to be the province of privileged, middle-aged, middle-class white people. And where were the queer people? Where were the people of color? Where were the old people? Where were the young people? And so I wrote it so that everyone could have a tantric experience and have it in their own style. I love combining Tantra and BDSM. I love it when the kinky people come to the table, or the ashram, as it would be, or when the tantrikas go to the dungeon. The possibilities, I wrote a tantra book for the modern urban, suburban or rural, but the modern sensibility, the modern person.
Do you think that people in the Midwest, like I have a few listeners in Iowa, do you think that they could get something out of tantra?
Totally. Tantra, all tantra is a spiritual practice that includes sex. All it is in its simplest form is an embodied spiritual practice. It says that there are you can use any earthly activity to have a divine experience. You can wash the dishes tantrically. You can take out the trash tantrically. You can chant tantrically. You can do yoga poses tantrically. And you can have sex tantrically. And any of them, if done with mindfulness and consciousness and with right intention, can bring you to a meeting with the divine, whatever you term that to be.
Can we talk a little bit about the importance of intention?
Oh, yes. As opposed to goal?
Right.
The nicest thing about Tantra is that it discourages goal-oriented thinking. It places a great deal of emphasis on intention, meaning, and all consciousness is the ability to put your attention on your intention. If your intention is to create connection with a beloved, that can be achieved any number of ways. It doesn't say, well, first I'm going to go down on you, then you're going to go down on me, and then we're going to fuck, and then it'll be over when we have an orgasm. And if we don't have an orgasm, we failed.
Right.
Instead, it says, we're going to go on a journey together. We're going to see where we wind up tonight. But more importantly than where we wind up tonight, we're going to see what's along on all the rest stops on the sides of the path.
And it just makes room for what random weird stuff happens.
And the random weird stuff is often the best part. You say, you know, isn't it sort of like this completely fuckless, orgasmless thing? I said, no, you find so many different orgasmic expressions. You find so many ways to have peak experiences that orgasm takes on an entirely new meaning, new definition, new possibilities.
Right. And so in terms of a spiritual experience, I think that a lot of times people get stuck in a spiritual experience, like it has to look a certain way, or that it has, I mean, and also kind of works against itself, because spirituality, much like orgasm, the more you want it to be a certain thing, the harder it is.
Exactly. I think perhaps if we just could practice utter mindfulness, everything would be erotic and everything would be sacred. Don't you think?
Wouldn't that be wonderful?
Don't you think?
I'm totally into that reality. Let's create it.
Let's.
Because I think if food were sacred and homes were sacred and children were sacred and our bodies were sacred and the moments that we have interacting with each other were sacred, just imagine how nice everyone would be.
And I think it really does feel to me like it all comes down to practicing mindfulness. Mindfulness and radical acceptance, which I write about in Ecstasy Is Necessary. Radical acceptance is not a new term. It's a Buddhist practice. I explain it. What it is for me is accepting what is the way it is without expectation of change. Often we expect that if we do this or we say that or if we behave a certain way, that somebody will change or something will change. Or we can convince them to change because they love us and they want to make us happy, whatever. The minute we go, okay, that is the way it is and I'm not going to expect it to change, all the tension comes off it and an entire universe of new creative possibilities appear. And the minute you expect, you say, okay, it's not going to change, things immediately change because the only thing natural in the world is change. But while we have a stranglehold on it, it can't change because it can't move.
Right. Well, and your mind can be so limited, you know, and what you think with your mind, and you're like, I have this expectation, and your mind is all like, I'm going to hang on to that and create all this emotion and drama and stuff. It's just,
it is the way it is.
Right.
You know, and so let's come up with another solution that isn't this either or. Mm-hmm. And that's another thing. It's binary thinking, this the either the good, bad, sex or God. Male or female, BDSM or Tantra. Mm-hmm. The minute you hear a binary, you know you have possibility. You immediately know those are the two things that should be blended immediately.
Right. You're like, okay, now we make those the same thing. Cause
exactly,
they are.
Exactly.
Right.
The fastest way into some form of ecstasy is to dive straight into a binary and go, let's mess this up.
So tell me, what's next? Like, where are you taking ecstasy to Housewives of America?
Well, what's interesting is I don't write books because I think I figured something out. I write books because I think I have a great question. And then I explore what I have learned about the question. In Ecstasy It's Necessary, I also include a lot of other voices, what they think about the question. And I go out in the world and gather answers based on the questions the book has provoked. So what's next for me is seeing what comes, creating workshops based on the book that further help people dive into the experience, and we're going to see what comes out of it. It's, for me, it's a big learning curve. And so I've got a new radio show coming up, I've got a new website coming up, and we'll see where it goes from there. My website, the current one, is BarbaraCarellis.com. That's CARRELLAS. And there's lots of juicy stuff on there, and you'll also get to hear where I'm going to be next.
And don't you have an Ecstasy Is Necessary website as well?
I do. It's called ecstasyisnecessary.com, where you can read all about the book.
And you're going to have videos.
Oh, definitely. There will be videos are in the works now. I've got a radio show on Hay House Radio. That's hayhouseradio.com. I have a radio show every Tuesday afternoon. Great fun. Call in. Join me.
And are you going to talk about full body orgasm some more? Because, I mean, I don't know that everyone knows that you can have an orgasm with your whole body, and we only talk about it every now and then, so it's kind of important, you know?
You'll just have to come to the website. Okay. Because actually, you get instructions for how to have a breath and energy orgasm, which is a full body orgasm, if you sign up for my newsletter on my website.
Okay, thank you very much, Barbara Carellis.
Thank you.
You can download free podcasts at sexplorationwithmonica.com.